What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about some comic books that came out this very day.
Ooh.
From yonder place over there and came into, I don't know what I'm talking about. Should we just jump into some reviews,
Pete? Yes, please.
Enough of this prevaricating at the top of the
show,
if you will.
Big word use.
I got a new calendar.
Let's talk about your favorite here, Kill Minotaur.
Oh, sure. Well, so we're going to talk about four books today, three Image books, one DC book. We'll kick it off by talking about Kill the Minotaur number 6. Now, Pete, this was the first one of these that you've read, is that correct?
So explain it to me, because I read it. There wasn't one Minotaur in there. things got killed, but they weren't a Minotaur.
Right.
And so I'm like, what the hell's going on?
Well, can I blow your mind for a second?
Please.
That thing was the Minotaur.
What? The Labyrinth? The thing they were calling the Labyrinth?
Yeah. The monster that they're killing.
That I've seen Minotaurs, and that was not a Minotaur.
You've seen real-life Minotaurs? IRL Minotaurs?
No. Like Minotaurs in comics and movies and television.
Oh, okay.
Like a person.
Right. Well, this is like a cool riff on a Minotaur.
Are you saying you've seen a live, in real-life Minotaur?
I don't want to brag. But one time I was in a corn maze, and I saw these two pointy things coming out.
Were
and
they corn?
The,
was
on
it
the
corn?
Other side, there was human legs, and I heard a lot of weird grunting, and I know it was a Minotaur.
So you didn't fully see the Minotaur.
I don't want to say I saw it, but it was implied.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you about this series. So this is a riff on the classic Minotaur myth, but it takes it to an insane, crazy, hyper-violent level. A bunch of young kids have been thrown into this labyrinth as sacrifices for the Minotaur. Some of them are trying to kill the Minotaur, some are not.
Back up. People are throwing their kids into a maze for the Minotaur?
Yeah, that was the times.
Oh, wow.
Minotaur times. And the violence is super over the top. It kind of is sort of, without spoiling anything, revealed that maybe it's some sort of weird alien spaceship type thing that happened at some point. It's not totally explained in terms of the mythology of the book, not the myth of the myth. But it is like, it starts with a Minotaur thing, riffs off in insane directions. And this being the last issue, I was curious to see how it was all going to tie up. It doesn't totally tie up. They definitely leave it open for a sequel. But it's really cool. And I think particularly as a fan of hyper-violence, Pete,
I enjoyed the violence. There's no question about that. Coming in on the last issue was a little confusing, especially because I kept waiting for a Minotaur to show up.
Here's the thing. Again, the monster in the book is the Minotaur, and I don't want to spoil anything, but they kill the Minotaur in the book.
Well, they were calling it a labyrinth. You know, I like my violence simple. You know, I don't like a lot of confusion, so call it a fucking Minotaur.
It's the avatar of the labyrinth.
Okay.
If you will.
Sure.
Will you?
No, I won't.
Oh, okay.
I just wish they would call it a Minotaur.
So they're not going to keep expecting
another Minotaur type thing to show up.
Yeah. Cool. Let's move on then. Definitely pick that up. I think it's going to be in trade soon, and they're talking about a sequel, so I recommend it. Pete doesn't know what he's talking about. let's talk about a DC comic book, The Batman Who Laughs, number one.
Oh.
It's a me, Batman, blah, blah.
All right. So I still like this kind of event, but I'm done with the spinoffs and the, you know, it's this idea of like bad stories come to life and this thing of like not our Joker but another Joker and how fucked up this Joker is and how fucked up these other Batman and shit are, and it's too much. Where it's like, I want my Batman back and I want my Joker back because these are making me just angry.
Well, I thought this was an interesting book that I was excited to check out because for those of you who haven't been picking up the Dark Knight's Metal event.
S&M Joker is this issue. It's the
S&M. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
You kind of cut to the chase there, Pete.
Yeah, that's what I do.
But the idea of the event is that these dark, evil Batman from alternate universes, from, like you said, stories that should never have existed, have invaded the regular DC Comics universe, including one called The Batman Who Laughs, who is a riff on the Joker and Batman. A lot of riffs on the show, Pete.
Yep.
We didn't know his origin. We didn't know anything about him until this issue, really. We've met all of the other ones, these one-shots and through the crossovers they're doing and everything, but he was really intriguing, so I was excited to find out more about him. And essentially, he got invaded by Joker molecules.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah. The old Joker molecules. You got to be careful. You kids, if you're listening at home, wash your hands. All right? You don't want to get invaded by Joker molecules because that's how it starts.
You should definitely make some sort of film strip. Distribute to schools because I think they need it. One thing I do want to talk about with this issue. So I like this issue. I thought James Tynion IV wrote it. He's always very good. But it's the art is by Riley Rosmo, who is one of my favorites right now. Riley and James worked together previously on the Batman Shadow series, yep, which is also awesome. And that's, to me, what really brings this to life. The Batmaner Laughs is such a weirdly, interestingly designed character. To see him through Riley Rosmo's pencils is really cool.
Well, yeah, he's a fantastic artist. But the thing is, it's very stylized, because I fell in love with him. They did Perhaponauts for a little while, and then he did this like Bigfoot one. I can't remember the title of, but it was amazing. And it's very stylized. So if you love it, then it's fantastic. But if it's a little, because it is a little different, it can pull you out of the story a little bit.
Yeah, I still don't quite totally, buy into the idea of, well, this is what would happen if the Batman became Joker. Not exactly. It's still kind of like, this is what the Joker was, Joker, and everybody thought he was Batman, pretty much.
But it's just so much right now. Like, we have this event, which is a lot of comics. Then there's also the White Knight, which is going on. And I'm kind of like, what if storied out with this whole thing?
Too much Batman for you?
It's just too much of the, what if Batman was the bad guy? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. I'm over the limit on this.
I didn't want to mention this, but I'm doing a 15-issue series for DC Comics. What if Batman's head was upside down? And it's basically like, it explores kind of what would happen.
Wait, the cowl on the chin then? And then the top of his head is open? Like, how does
you're going to have to read the book to
I guess I have to.
I do want to mention something about costumes that drove me a little nuts. The biggest thing that I have been wondering about the Batman Who Laughs is he wears like this metal thing over his eyes that has spikes coming over it. And every book that he's been in, I've wondered, how does he see? You know? And so they show the evolution of his costume in this book where it's Batman, and then it's Batman with kind of a rictus Joker smile going on. And then they see a new costume that has a little bit of green in it, and it has like a little bit of leather belts. And then he's like full on Batman Who Laughs. There's no side point where he's like, well, now I'm going to put on a thing where it goes over my eyes and there's spikes and that's it.
Well, just so you know, like when you have spikes for eyes, what they do in the costume is they cut a little bit. It's like a little bit longer of like a little crescent moon underneath the spike so you can see out.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Is that true?
Yeah.
That's kind of like how Batman rubs mascara all over his eyes to make his eyes dark. Yeah. Again, it's like a fun fact. Like Batman, you don't normally think about his attention to detail with his costume, but it's very nice the amount of time he spends.
Yeah.
Whether he's a Joker or not.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So are you, at this point, you're good on the one-shots?
Yeah. Just let's get into this event already. I'm excited for it. But it's just one of those things where sometimes that happens with the big events. There's too many spinoffs, and it can get you a little bit of fatigued for the event, which is...
Yeah, well,
you
know. I got to say I've been enjoying them. I get where you're at. Luckily, this is the end of this run of these. There are going to be more one-shots and spin-offs from the event. But I still do really appreciate the fact that this is a very focused story-wise event. Like, the spin-offs actually fill in the story.
Have to read the spin-offs.
Exactly, which...
Yeah. Which is how they get you.
It's how they get you, but it's really, I appreciate that versus a bunch of stuff where there's like, hey, there's an event happening over here. Here's a thing that doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, it'd be nice to be able to just read one comic and get to know the event.
I have a huge piece of news for you. You can do that, and it's called literally any other comic. All right, let's move on to something that is a done-in-one event, except it's the beginning of an ongoing series. Evolution, number one from Image Comics. Now, Pete, you weren't a huge fan of this one either.
Well, now, here's the thing. I love the team on this.
Yep.
And I've loved that artwork before. Yep. But for some reason, this artwork with this storytelling kept pulling me out because we got all these different stories. Mm-hmm. And I wanted, I don't know, like I love this artwork separately, but with this story, it just, I couldn't get into it because every time I was kind of like getting used to it, it was a different person's story. And then, I don't know, I just felt like the marriage of writing and art has to be in such a way where it pulls you into that world and keeps you in that world. And for this, because the story was starting and stopping, and I didn't feel like there was enough drastic change in the art between the stories, I didn't feel connected with what was happening. It kept me at a distance, which is probably all my fault. but it was just also like in the beginning panels, you have this guy who's dressed as a janitor trying to get into a pharmaceutical closet. And then the guy later, he's a doctor. And then I'm thinking, wait, is he a janitor or was just in his off time trying to break into the pills closet? And it was just like, I don't know if it was the layout or the kind of thing, but
I think I'm maybe misunderstanding what you're saying. I think that's two different guys. I think so. I could be wrong.
Okay. But that also is, you got to make it clearer that the two separate guys are two separate guys. Don't make them look so similar then.
Right. So, okay. Well, let's talk about this. I think it's interesting because you hate art jams. You're not a fan of art jams at all when there's one writer and they have like a bunch of artists in the book. And this is the opposite, where we have three writers telling the story and one artist who's Joe, I always get his name wrong, Infernari. There we go. I wanted to say Infernari. Yeah. But the writers are James Asmus, Joe Keating, Christopher Sabella, and Joshua Williamson. So you have four writers, four storylines with the same artist on them. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that you didn't like it in a very similar way to how you don't like the art jams.
Yeah, I guess I'm a one-trick pony.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was implying. The idea of the book, for those of you who didn't pick it up, you could probably tell from the title, but it's basically about the next step in human evolution, and it happens in the form of almost a horrific plague. Like, it's a little bit of a mix of a start of a post-apocalypse zombie-type book. The art is really cool. Joe Infernari is great at what he does. The writing is very interesting. I liked it as a first chapter. It really gets to the beginning of the story on the last page, but a lot of this is about setting up the disparate characters all over the world.
Now, let me ask you, were you mad at the doctor? Because I was very mad at the doctor.
Why?
You're seeing these fucked up things on a child and you're not communicating it to the mom. You're straight up lying to the mom.
That's what I do with my wife and my kids. If I see some fucked up stuff on my kids, I'm like, I make a mental note of it. Don't tell my wife. Go to my lab.
All right. Well, you are married and I am not. So
exactly.
I'm going to defer to you on this, but that doesn't seem like a good way to live. It seems like
I think it is a
the
good
truth
way
is a better way to go with this. Hey, your kid has some kind of weird zombie virus that's completely fucking off the charts. It's not going to be okay.
Here's what I do. I stick a Q-tip in their wound, take a sample, and then I'm good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's parenting 101. They teach you that at the hospital. So anyway, I like this book. I thought it was interesting. I'm intrigued enough to check out the second issue.
I'm not like, I'm going to pick up the next one, too.
Get it. You're violently against it. It's fine. Don't even worry about it. Let's talk about your favorite book of the entire year, Wonder Woman Conan, number three.
Come on, dude. Come on. This is fantastic, right? What a team up, these two. I love this shit. I think it's fantastic seeing them together.
What do you like about this?
Well, it's the classic, like, two people who you would think would be like really good friends, and they're kind of like forced. They have this like adorable thing when they were kids, and now they're kind of like chained together and kind of like
literally.
Yeah, literally chained together and like gotta kind of figure things out. And I don't know, like I'm a sucker for this kind of stuff. I love it. I think it's Conan and Wonder Woman are a great duo, and I just eat it up. I just think it's Very enjoyable.
I'm really enjoying this book, too. Gail Simone writes a good Wonder Woman. She writes a good Conan.
Yeah.
What I really like about it in particular is how sweet and sad Conan is throughout the entire book. The plot of the book is that Wonder Woman is lost in time. She has lost her memory as well, doesn't know who she is. And Conan sees her and immediately thinks she is this woman, Yana, that he knew when they were kids and he fell in love with and was kind of his first love.
Yeah.
So he's playing it like that. She's doesn't remember anything. So there's a little bit of romance there, a lot of action where they're fighting undead crow beasts and things like that.
Yeah. Evil twin crow beasts.
It's exactly what you need this book to be, I think.
Also, it's good because right now, I mean, in Wonder Woman recently, Wonder Woman's had a hard time with, like, her memory and past and what's going on. So it ties in kind of nicely to what's happening.
Yeah. She's been having a really rough time. I hope she's okay.
Yeah,
are you going to give her a call or like hit her up on Facebook?
No,
or whatever?
She's too busy.
She just
want to hear from me.
Just,
you know, I worried about her though.
Hit up her DMs, slide into her DMs. Do you think if Wonder Woman was in the real world, A, she would have a Twitter account, B, people would always be sliding into her DMs?
I don't think she would have a Twitter account if she was real. I think she would be a little bit more low tech.
Okay, so you shut it down at the she doesn't have a Twitter account, not
yeah,
her DMs.
I would probably like train a raven or something to go say hi and be
yeah. You'd have a raven slide into her DMs.
Oh, man, you are weird and creepy.
That's a thing that people do. I'll slide into your DMs.
I'll slide into
whoever's DMs. I love sliding. I love sliding and I love DMs.
Oh, man.
Guys, we do a lot of shows. We do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. in New York that's totally free at the Pit Loft. We'd love to see you there. Come on down and say hi. We'll chat about comic books. Also, this show and the other shows we do are free to listen to, but do cost us a little bit of money to do. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about all the amazing guests we have on the show.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com on Facebook, Comic Book Club Live, I assume.
Yep.
I don't know. You can search for it, figure it out. And until next time, we'll be sliding into your DMs.
Yeah.